How dost thou, superior as thou art in knowledge, desire to praise that cowboy in respect of whom even men of little intelligence may address invectives? If Krishna in his infancy slew a vulture, what is there remarkable in that? Or in that other feat of his, O Bhishma, namely in his slaughter of Ashwa and Vrishava, both of whom were unskilled in battle? If this one threw down by a kick an innate piece of wood, namely a car, what is there, O Bhishma, wonderful in that? Right, so now he's going through all his pastimes. O Bhishma, what is there remarkable in this one's having supported for a week the Govardhan Mountain, which is like an anthill? While sporting on top of a mountain, this one ate a large quantity of food. Hearing these words of thine, many have wondered exceedingly. But thou who art conversant with the rules of morality, is not this still more wrongful, that great person, namely Kamsa, whose food this one ate, hath been slayed by him? Thou infamous one of the Kuru race, thou art ignorant of the rules of morality. Hast thou not ever heard from wise men speaking unto thee what I would now tell thee? The virtuous and the wise always instruct the honest that weapons must never be made to descend upon women, kine and brahmanas, and upon those whose food hath been taken, as also upon those whose shelter hath been enjoyed. It seemeth, O Bhishma, that all these teachings hath been thrown away by thee. O famous one of the Kuru race, desiring to praise Keshava, thou describest him before me as great and superior in knowledge and in age, as if I knew nothing. If at thy word, O Bhishma, one that has slain women, meaning Putana, and kine be worshipped, then what is to become of this great lesson? How can one who is such deserve praise? O Bhishma, this one is the foremost of all wise men. This one is the Lord of the universe. Hearing these words of thine, Janardhan believeth that these are all true, but surely they are all false. The verses that a chanter sings, even if he sings them often, produce no impression on him. And every creature acts according to his disposition, even like the bird Bulinga that picks the particles of flesh from between the lion's teeth, though preaching against rashness. Assuredly, thy disposition is very mean. There is not the least doubt about it. Here, mean, what does that mean? What does mean mean in this usage of mean?
Miserly?
Miserly, yeah. Okay. Miserly. You understand? So it's meaning mean here means mean can be that you're rough or violent, you know, in situations that don't require it. But it also can mean that one, you know, is very minimal. You know, very miserly, very, you know, there's not much there. You say you have mean intelligence, can mean very little intelligence, right? Because only someone with very little intelligence also then would behave badly. Does that make sense? There is not the least doubt about it. And so also it seemeth that the sons of Pandu, who regard Krishna as deserving of worship, and who have thee for their guide, are possessed of a sinful disposition. Possessing a knowledge of virtue, thou hast fallen off from the path of the wise. Therefore thou art sinful. Who, O Bhima, knowing himself to be virtuous and superior in knowledge, will so act as thou hast done from motives of virtue? If thou knowest the ways of the morality, if thy mind is guided by wisdom, blessed be thou. Why then, O Bhishma, was that virtuous girl Amba, who had set her heart upon another, carried off by thee, so proud of wisdom and virtue? I think her mind was set on Shishupal, wasn't it? Shalya. Okay. That's right. Shishupal was with me. Thy brother Vichitravirya, conformable to the ways of the honest and the virtuous, knowing that girl's condition, did not marry her, though brought by thee. Boasting as thou dost of virtue, in thy very sight upon the widow of thy brother, were sons begotten by another according to the ways of the honest. Where is thy virtue, O Bhishma? Because technically, this niyoga is only used on girls whose husband is alive, not on ones whose husband has died, right? So therefore, it would be, in this case, considered not ideal. This thy celibacy, which thou leadest either from ignorance or from impotence, is fruitless. O thou who art conversant with virtue, I do not behold thy well-being. Thou who expoundest morality in this way, dost not seem to have ever waited upon the old. Worship, gift, study, sacrifices, distinguished by large gifts to the Brahmins, these all equal not in merit even 1/16th part of that which is obtainable by the possession of a son. Right? In other words, those who are in the Karmakanda. Right, so for them who you want to go to the heavenly planets, the most powerful, the most important thing for them is having a son, because the son will perform the Shraddha rites. Those Shraddha rites will keep you in heaven and will get him to heaven. Right, so therefore, then they'll put that in front of doing great sacrifices, worships, because worship means here they're worshiping the demigods anyway. Study, because they're studying it only for going to the heavenly planets. So then this is practical. These other things aren't as practical, right? If you're going back to Godhead, you're interested in jnana, then this reverses. Then these others would be more important. Does that make sense? Okay. The merit of Bhishma, that is acquired by numberless vows and fasts, assuredly becomes fruitless in the case of one that is childless. Right, because he can't go to the heavenly planets like Jarakaru, his whole life being a Yayava. So then they don't even keep a home. They just wander, and when the sun sets, wherever they are, that becomes their house for the night. So these Brahmins then, you know, what great piety they would have, but it wasn't considered fruitful because he didn't have a son. Right? Thou art childless, old, and the expounder of false morality. Like the swan in the story, thou shalt nigh die at the hands of thy relatives. Other men possessed of knowledge have said this of old. I will presently recite it in full in thy hearing. Vaishampayana continued. Shishupal continued. There lived of yore an old swan on the sea coast, ever speaking of morality, but otherwise in his conduct, he used to instruct the feathery tribe, practice ye virtue and forgo sin. And these words that other truthful birds, O Bhishma, constantly hear him utter, the other oviparious creatures ranging the sea, it hath been heard by us, O Bhishma, used to, for virtue's sake, bring him food. O Bhishma, all those other birds keeping their eggs with him, ranged and dived in the waters of the sea. The sinful old swan, attentive to his own pursuits, used to eat up the eggs of all those birds that foolishly trusted in him. After a while, when the eggs were decreasing in number, a bird of great wisdom had his suspicions aroused, and he even witnessed the affair one day. Having witnessed the sinful act of the old swan, that bird in great sorrow spoke unto all the other birds. Then, O thou best of the Kurus, all those birds witnessing with their own eyes the act of the old swan, approached that wretch of false conduct and slew him. Thy behavior, O Bhishma, is even like that of the old swan. These lords of earth might slay thee in anger like those creatures of the feathery tribe slaying the old swan. Persons conversant with the Puranas recite a proverb. O Bhishma, as regards to this occurrence, I shall, O Bharata, repeat it to thee fully. It is even this. O thou that supportest thyself on thy wings, though thy heart is affected by the passions, thou preachest yet a virtue. But this thy sinful act of eating up the eggs transgresseth thy speech. Right? So it's one thing is that one may be working on one's own difficulties, but one is not disturbing the others that one is being, that are giving one benefit. Section 41. Vaishampayana said, Shishupal continued, that mighty king Jarasandha, who desired not to fight with Krishna, saying, he is a slave, was worthy of my greatest esteem. Who will regard as praiseworthy that act which was done by Keshava, as also by Bhima and Arjuna, in the matter of Jarasandha's death. Entering by an improper gate, disguised as a brahmana, thus Krishna observed the strength of King Jarasandha. When that monarch first offered unto this wretch water to wash his feet, it was then that he denied his brahmanhood from seeming motives of virtue. And when Jarasandha, O thou of the Kuru race, asked Krishna, Bhima, and Dhananjaya to eat, it was this Krishna that refused that monarch's request. If this one is the Lord of the universe, as this fool representeth him to be, why doth he not regard himself as a brahmana? This, however, surprises me greatly, that though thou leadest the Pandavas away from the path of the wise, they yet regard thee as honest. Or perhaps this is scarcely a matter of surprise in respect of those that have thee, O Bharata, womanish in disposition and bent down with age for their counselor in everything. Vaishampayana continued, hearing these words of Shishupal, harsh both in import and sound, that foremost of mighty men, Bhimasen, endued with energy, became angry. His eyes naturally large and expanding like unto lotus leaves, became still more extended and red as copper under the influence of that rage. The assembled monarchs beheld on his forehead three lines of wrinkles like the Ganga of treble currents on the treble-peaked mountain. When Bhimasena began to grind his teeth in rage, the monarchs beheld his face resembling that of death himself, at the end of the yuga, prepared to swallow every creature. And as the hero, endued with great energy of mind, was about to leap up impetuously, the mighty arm Bhima caught him like Mahadev seizing Mahasena, the celestial generalissimo. O Bharata, Bhima's wrath was soon appeased by Bhima, the grandsire of the Kurus, with various kinds of counsel. And Bhima, that chastiser of foes, could not disobey Bhima's words, like the ocean that never transgresseth, even when swollen with the waters of the rainy season, its continents. Right, so notice, remember that Bhima is the strongest 10,000 elephants, right? And now he is very angry that even the kings feel that he is like death personified. And Bhishma just caught him as he was getting up. Does that make sense? So how strong is Bhishma? Right? Because we have to remember he's actually a celestial. But he performs his pastimes here. But these things are subtle because he's not trying to prove himself as special. He just tries to act as ordinary as possible, though he still stands out so greatly. But, O King, even though Bhima was angry, The brave Shishupal, depending on his own manhood, did not tremble in fear. Even though Bhima was leaping up impetuously every moment, Shishupal bestowed not a single thought on him, like a lion that recks not, a little animal in rage. The powerful king of Chedi, beholding, because now he was a vassal of Jarasandha, because Jarasandha was so powerful. Bhima, with his own hands, killed Jarasandha. And now Shishupal is sitting there not caring for him, thinking of him like a small animal that's upset. Right? So, yes. The powerful king of Chedi, beholding Bhima of terrible prowess, in such rage, laughingly said, "Release him, O Bhishma. Let all the monarchs behold him scorched by my prowess, like an insect in fire." Hearing these words of the ruler of the Chedis, Bhishma, the foremost of the Kurus and chief of all intelligent men, spoke unto Bhima these words. Section 42. Bhishma said, "This Shishupal was born in the line of the king of Chedi with three eyes and four hands. And as soon as he was born, he screamed and brayed like an ass." Right? Anyone else brayed like an ass? Duryodhana, right? So, not good. Right? On that account, his father and mother, along with their relatives, were struck with fear. And beholding these extraordinary omens, his parents resolved to abandon him. But an incorporeal voice, about this time, said unto the king and his wife, with their ministers and priests, all with hearts paralyzed by anxiety, those words, "This thy son, O king, that hath been born, will become both fortunate and superior in strength. Therefore thou hast no fear from him. Indeed, cherish the child without anxiety. He will not die in childhood. His time is not yet come. He that will slay him with weapons hath also been born." Hearing these words, the mother, rendered anxious by affection for her son, addressed the invisible being and said, "I bow with joined hands unto him that hath uttered these words respecting my son. Whether he be an exalted divinity or any other being, let him tell me another word. I desire to hear who will be the slayer of this, my son." The invisible being then said, "He upon whose lap this child being placed, the superfluous arms of his will fall down upon the ground like a pair of five-headed snakes, and the sight of whom his third eye on his forehead will disappear will be his slayer." Hearing of the child's three eyes and four arms, as also of the words of the invisible being, all the kings of the earth went to Chedi to behold him. The king of Chedi, worshipping as each deserved, the monarchs that came, gave his child upon their laps one after another. And though the child was placed upon the laps of a thousand kings one after another, yet that which the incorporeal voice had said came not to pass. Having heard of all this at Dvaravati, the mighty Yadava heroes, Sankarshan and Janardhan, also went to the capital of Chedis to see their father's sister, that daughter of the Yadavas, the queen of Chedi. Saluting everyone according to his rank, the king and queen also, and inquiring after everybody's welfare, both Rama and Keshava took their seats. So that means then he's a cousin like the Pandavas are. Right? So they're all quite close. After those heroes had been worshipped, the queen, with great pleasure herself, placed the child on the lap of Damodar. As soon as the child was placed on his lap, those superfluous arms of his fell down, and the eye in his forehead also disappeared. Beholding this, the queen, in alarm and anxiety, begged of Krishna a boon. She said, "O mighty armed Krishna, I am afflicted with fear. Grant me a boon." Thou art the assurer of all afflicted ones, and the dispeller of everyone's fear. Thus addressed by her, Krishna, that son of the Yadu race, said, Fear not, O respected one. Thou art acquainted with morality. Thou needest have no fear from me. What boon shall I give thee? What shall I do, O aunt? Whether able or not, I shall do thy bidding. Thus spoken to by Krishna, the queen said, O thou of great strength, thou wilt have to pardon the offenses of Shishupal for my sake. O tiger of the Yadu race, know, O Lord, even this is the boon that I ask. Krishna then said, O aunt, even when he will deserve to be slain, I will pardon 100 offenses of his. Grieve thou not, Bhishma continued. Even thus, O Bhima, is this wretch of a king, Shishupal of wicked heart, who, proud of the boon granted by Govinda, summons thee to battle. Section 43. Vaishampayana continued. Bhishma said, The will under which the ruler of Chedi summoneth thee to fight, though thou art of strength that knoweth no deterioration, is scarcely his own intention. Assuredly, this is the purpose of Krishna himself, the Lord of the universe. O Bhima, what king is there on earth that would dare abuse me thus, as this wretch of his race already possessed by death hath done by today? This mighty armed one is without doubt a portion of Hari's energy, and surely the Lord desireth to take back unto him that energy of his own. In consequence of this, O tiger of the Kuru race, this tiger-like king of Chedi, so wicked of heart, roareth in such a way, caring little for us all. Vaishampayana continued, Hearing these words of Bhishma, the king of Chedi could bear no more. He then replied in rage unto Bhishma in these words, Let our foes, O Bhishma, be endued with that prowess which this Keshava hath, whom thou, like a professional chanter of hymns, praiseth, rising repeatedly from thy seat. If thy mind, O Bhishma, delighteth so in praising others, then praise thou these kings, leaving off Krishna. Praise thou this excellent of kings, Dadada, the ruler of Vahalika, who rent this earth as soon as he was born. Praise thou, O Bhishma, this Karna, the ruler of the territories of Anga and Vanga. Wow. Karna was a Bengali. Who is equal in strength unto him of 1,000 eyes, who draweth a large bow, who endued with mighty arms, owneth celestial earrings of heavenly make, with which he was born, and this coat of mail possessing the splendor of the rising sun, who vanquished in a wrestling encounter the invincible Jarasandha, equal unto Vasava himself, and who tore and mangled that monarch. O Bhishma, praise Drona and Ashwatthama, whose both father and son are mighty warriors, worthy of praise, and the best of brahmanas, and either of whom, O Bhishma, if enraged, could annihilate this earth with its mobile and immobile creatures, as I believe. I do not behold, O Bhishma, the king that is equal in battle under Drona or Ashwatthama. Why wishest thou not to praise them? Passing over Duryodhana, that mighty armed king of kings, who is unequaled in the whole earth, girt with her seas, and King Jayadratha, accomplished in weapons and endued with great power prowess, and Druma, the preceptor of the Kimpurushas, celebrated over the world for prowess, Sharadvat's son, old Kripa, the preceptor of the Bharata princes, endued with great energy, why dost thou praise Keshava? Passing over that foremost of bowmen, that excellent of kings, Rukmin of great energy, why praisest thou Keshava? Passing over Bhishmaka of abundant energy, King Dantavakra, and Bhagadatta, known for his innumerable sacrificial stakes, Jayatsena, the king of the Magadha, Virata and Drupad, Shakuni, Vrihadvala, Vinda and Anuvinda, Avavant Pandya, Sweta Uttama Shankya of great prosperity, the proud Vrihasena, the powerful Ekalavya, and the great charioteer Kalinga of abundant energy. Why dost thou praise Keshava? And O Bhishma, if the mind is always inclined to sing the praises of others, why dost thou not praise Shalya and other rulers of the earth? O King, what can be done by me when it seemeth thou hast not heard anything before from virtuous old men giving lessons in morality? Hast thou never heard, O Bhishma, that reproach and glorification, both of self and others, are not practices of those who are respectable? There is no one that reproveth thy conduct. O Bhishma, in unceasingly praising with devotion from ignorance alone, Keshava, so unworthy of praise, how dost thou, from thy wish alone, establish the whole universe in the servitor and cowherd of Bhoja? Perhaps, O Bharata, this thy inclination is not conformable to thy true nature, like to what may be seen in the bird Bulinga, as hath already been said by me. There is a bird called Bulinga, living on the other side of the Himavat. O Bhim, saying that bird never uttereth words of adverse import, never do anything rash. This is what she always saith, but never understandeth that she herself always acteth very rashly. Possessed of little intelligence, that bird picketh from the lion's mouth the pieces of flesh sticking between the teeth, and at a time when the lion is employed in eating. Assuredly, O Bhishma, that bird liveth at the pleasure of the lion. O sinful wretch, thou always speakest like that bird. Assuredly, O Bhishma, thou art alive at the pleasure only of these kings. Employed in acts contrary to the opinions of all, there is none else like thee. Vaishampayana continued. Hearing these harsh words of the ruler of Chedi, Bhishma, O king, said in the hearing of the king of Chedi, truly am I alive at the pleasure of these rulers of earth, but I do regard these kings as not equal to even a straw. He says, yes, I'm alive at the pleasure of these kings, but I don't consider them any more than the strength of a straw. So, as soon as these words were spoken by Bhishma, the kings became inflamed with wrath, and the down of some amongst them stood erect, and some began to reprove Bhishma. The down of some. Does that mean like the hair on their body or something? Like that. So then they all bristling with anger, I guess. Hearing those words of Bhishma, some amongst them that were wielders of large bows exclaimed, this wretch Bhishma, though old, is exceedingly boastful. He deserveth not our pardon. Therefore, ye kings, incensed with rage as this Bhishma is, it is well that this wretch were slain like an animal, or, mustering together, let us burn him in a fire of grass or straw. Hearing these words of the monarch, Bhishma, the grandsire of the Kurus, endued with great intelligence, addressing those lords of the earth, said, I do not see the end of our speeches, for words may be answered with words. Therefore, ye lords of earth, listen to all unto what I say, whether I be slain like an animal, or burnt in a fire of grass and straw. Thus do I distinctly place my foot on the heads of ye all. So now he seems to be taking up Sahadev's stand. Right? Here is Govinda that knoweth no deterioration. Him have we worshipped. Let him who wishes for a speedy death summon to battle Madhava of dark hue, the wielder of the discus and the mace, and falling either into and mingle with the body of this God. Section 44. Vaishampayana said, hearing these words of Bhishma, the ruler of Chedi, endued with exceeding prowess, desirous of combating with Vasudeva, addressed him and said, O Janardana, I challenge thee, come fight with me until I slay thee today with all the Pandavas. For, O Krishna, the sons of Pandu also, who disregarding the claims of all these kings have worshipped thee, who art no king, deserve to be slain by me along with thee. Even this is my opinion, O Krishna, that they who from childishness have worshipped thee, as if thou deservest it, although thou art unworthy of worship, being only a slave and a wretch and no king, deserve to be slain by me. Having said that, that tiger amongst kings stood there roaring in anger. After Shishupal had ceased, Krishna, addressing all the kings in the presence of the Pandavas, spoke these words in a soft voice. Krishna likes to do this. He speaks very softly. Ye kings, this wicked-minded one, who is the son of a daughter of the Sattvata race, is a great enemy of us of the Sattvata race. And though we never seek to injure him, he ever seeketh our evil. This wretch of cruel deeds, ye kings, hearing that we had gone to the city of Pragjoshita, came and burnt Dwarka, although he is the son of my father's sister. While King Bhoja was sporting on the Raivata hill, this one fell upon the attendants of that king, slew and led away many of them in chains to his own city. Sinful in all his purpose, this wretch, in order to obstruct the sacrifice of my father, stole the sacrificial horse of the horse sacrifice that had been let loose under the guard of armed men. Prompted by sinful motives, this one ravished the reluctant wife of the innocent Vabhru, Akrura, on her way from Dwarka to the country of the Sauviras. This injurer of his maternal uncle, disguising himself in the attire of the king of Karusha, ravished also the innocent Bhadra, the princess of Vishala, the intended bride of King Karusha. I have patiently borne all these sorrows for the sake of my father's sister. It is, however, very fortunate that all this hath occurred today in the presence of all the kings. Beholdeth ye all today the hostility this one beareth towards me, and know ye also all that he hath done me at my back. For the excess of that pride in which he hath indulged in the presence of these monarchs, he deserveth to be slain by me. I am ill able to pardon today the injuries that he hath done me. Desirous of speedy death, this fool has desired Rukmini. But the fool obtained her not, like a Shudra failing to obtain the audition of the Vedas. Vaishampayana continued, hearing these words of Vasudeva, all the assembled monarchs began to reprove the ruler of Chedi. But the powerful Shishupal, having heard those words, laughed aloud and spoke thus, O Krishna, art thou not ashamed in saying in this assembly, especially before all these kings, that Rukmini, thy wife, had been coveted by me? O slayer of Madhu, who else is there than thee, who regardeth himself a man, would say in the midst of respectable men that his wife had been intended for somebody else. Right? It means, in other words, why would he mention in the public assembly my wife was supposed to marry someone else? Right? O Krishna, pardon me if thou pleasest, or pardon me not, but angry or friendly, what canst thou do unto me? While Shishupal was speaking thus, the slayer of Madhu thought in his mind of the discus that humbleth the pride of the Asuras. And as soon as the discus came into his hands, skilled in speech, the illustrious one loudly uttered these words, Listen, ye lords of the earth, why this one hath hitherto been pardoned by me. As asked by his mother, 100 offenses of his were to be pardoned by me. Even this was the boon she had asked, and even this I granted her. that number ye kings hath become full. I shall now slay him in your presence, ye monarchs. Having said this, the chief of the Yadus, the slayer of all foes, in anger, instantly cut off the head of the ruler of Chedi by means of his discus. And the mighty armed one fell down like a cliff struck with thunder. O monarch, the assembled kings then beheld a fierce energy, like under the sun in the sky, issue out of the body of the king of Chedi. And, O king, that energy then adored Krishna, possessed of eyes like lotus leaves, and worshipped by all the worlds, and entered his body. All the kings, beholding the energy which entered that mighty armed chief of men, regarded it as wonderful. When Krishna had slain the king of Chedi, the sky, though cloudless, poured showers of rain, and blasting thunders were hurled, and the earth itself began to tremble. There were some amongst the kings who spoke not a word during those unspeakable moments, but merely sat gazing at Janardhan. Some were there that rubbed in rage their palms with their forefingers, and there were others who, deprived of reason by rage, bit their lips with their teeth. Others amongst the kings applauded him of the Vrishni race in private, and some that were there excited with anger, while others became mediators. The great rishis with pleased hearts praised Keshava and went away. All the high-souled Brahmins and the mighty kings that were there, beholding Krishna's prowess, became glad at heart and praised him. Yudhishthira then commanded his brothers to perform without delay the funeral rites of King Shishupal, the brave son of Dhammaghosha, with proper respect. The sons of Pandu obeyed the behest of their brother. Yudhishthira then, with all the kings, installed the son of Shishupal in the sovereignty of the Chedis. Then that sacrifice, O monarch, of the king of the Kurus, possessed of great energy, blessed with every kind of prosperity, became exceedingly handsome and pleasing unto all young men. Commenced auspiciously, with all impediments removed, and furnished with abundance of wealth and corn. Right? Corn, what kind of corn? Grains, yeah. As also with plenty of rice and every kind of food. It was properly watched by Keshava. And Yudhishthira in due time completed the great sacrifice. The mighty armed Janardhana, the exalted Sodhi, with his bow called Sharanga, his discus and mace, guarded that sacrifice till its completion. All the Kshatriya monarchs, having approached the virtuous Yudhishthira, who had bathed after the conclusion of the sacrifice, said these words, "By good fortune thou hast come out successful. O virtuous one, thou hast obtained the imperial dignity. O thou of the Ajamita race, by thee hath been spread the fame of thy whole race. And, O King of Kings, by this act of thine, thou hast also acquired great religious merit. We have been worshipped by thee to the full extent of our desires. We now tell thee that we are desirous of returning to our kingdoms. It behooveth thee to grant us permission." Right? So they ask permission because he is the emperor now. Vaishampayana continued, "Hearing these words of the monarchs, King Yudhishthira the Just, worshipping each as he deserved, commanded his brothers, saying, 'These monarchs had all come to us at their own pleasure. These chastisers of foes are now desirous of returning to their own kingdoms, bidding me farewell. Blessed be ye, follow ye these excellent kings to the confines of our own dominions.' Hearing these words of their brother, the virtuous Pandava princes followed the kings one after another, as each deserved. The powerful Drishtadyumna followed without loss of time King Virat. Dhananjaya followed the illustrious and mighty charioteer Yajnasena. The mighty Bhimsena followed Bhishma and Dhritarashtra. Sahadev, that master of battle, followed the brave Drona and his son. And Nakula, O king, followed Suvala with his son. While the sons of Draupadi, with the son of Subhadra, followed those mighty warriors, the kings of the mountainous countries. Other bulls among Kshatriyas followed other Kshatriyas. And the Brahmanas by thousands also went away, duly worshipped. Vaishampayana continued, after all the kings and the brahmanas had gone away, the powerful Vasudeva, addressing Yudhishthira, said, O son of the Kuru race, with thy leave I also desire to go to Dwaraka. By great good fortune thou hast accomplished that the foremost of sacrifices, Rajasuya. Thus addressed by Janardana, Yudhishthira replied, owing to thy grace, O Govinda, I have accomplished the great sacrifice. It is owing to thy grace that the whole Kshatriya world, having accepted my sway, hath come hither with valuable tribute. O hero, without thee, my heart never feeleth any delight. How can I, therefore, O hero, give thee, O sinless one, leave to go? But thou must have to go to the city of Dwarka. The virtuous Hari of worldwide fame, thus addressed by Yudhishthira, cheerfully went with his cousin to Prita, and said, O aunt, thy sons have now obtained the imperial dignity. They have obtained vast wealth and have also been crowned with success. Be pleased with all this. Commanded by thee, O aunt, I desire to go to Dwarka. After this, Keshava bade farewell to Draupadi and Subhadra. Coming out then of the inner apartments, accompanied by Yudhishthira, he performed his ablutions and went through the daily rites of worship, and then made the brahmanas utter benedictions. Then the mighty armed Daruka came there with a car of excellent design and body resembling the clouds. Beholding the Garuda bannered car arrive thither, the high-souled one, with eyes like lotus leaves, walked around it respectfully, and ascending it, set out for Dwaravati. So who else does that? Arjuna, right? So we see Nara Narayan, that seems to be standard behavior for that. King Yudhishthira the Just, blessed with prosperity, accompanied by his brothers, followed on foot the mighty Vasudeva. Then Hari, with eyes like lotus leaves, stopped that best of cars for a moment, addressing Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, said, O king of kings, cherishest thou thy subjects with ceaseless vigilance and patience. And as the clouds are unto all creatures, as the large tree of spreading bough is unto birds, as he of a thousand eyes is unto the immortals, be thou the refuge and support of thy relatives. Krishna and Yudhishthira, having thus talked unto each other, took each other's leave and returned to their respective homes. O king, after the chief of the Satvata race had gone to Dwaravati, King Duryodhana alone, with King Suvala's son, Shakuni, these bulls among men continued to live in that celestial assembly house. Right? That was the problem, right? If they had left at this time, then there would have been a few more stories. Mahabharata would have been over, right? But this one activity here, then of them staying back, then makes the whole. How do you say? Yeah, we make the whole war and everything like that. So we see that here then, Yudhishthira means we see nicely here how everything is very clearly said. Even though there's a lot of emotion being presented, still, what is the reason behind it? You know, and they're giving, you know, their own at least perspective on the Shastric evidence or hearing from authority, right? Twice then he mentioned that Bhishma must not have heard from the old, you know, or from the wise. So then, this principle of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we see even here the Kshatriyas in their, you know, anger and all that are still following these rules. Right? Someone will say something that will be countered properly. You know, then only they'll say, you know, something. Then if words aren't working, then they'll start showing their prowess. Right? So, you know, they're following, you know, an etiquette here. Also Krishna, he's speaking very softly and telling about Shishupal, you know, and his position. because he doesn't want to say it with arrogance. He's saying it, you know, but this is the fact, you know. So you're supporting this guy, but this is what his character's like. Right? Because otherwise, why does he need to yell at the kings? They don't know. So once he explains it, then they themselves become upset with Shishupal. So like that, then it's all explained, and then after that, then it looks like it's going to turn into a fight, but then fortunately he says a few more words, that's the last of the insults, and then he's, you know, killed in front of everybody. So some appreciate it, some are, you know, dumbfounded, some don't appreciate but aren't going to say much, they're worried, some are very angry, but still they, you know, added up the situation and figured better to keep quiet. And then even afterwards, then they all praise Yudhishthira, even if they didn't necessarily like this particular little pastime, because he did accomplish it despite all odds. All the kings were there, they could have ruined the whole sacrifice, still he accomplished it. So that must be respected, right? Even if one is an enemy, one has to respect one's enemy, right? Because if one doesn't, that's foolish. Right? Because something that's done well is praised, right? We see that the kings will be in battle, and someone does some amazing feat, martial feat, it's praised by the others. Right? Only a fool wouldn't. Right? So that the prowess of another person should always be respected. Whether you have a good relationship with them or not, that's another story. But the proper thing is to appreciate others' abilities and that. Okay? So then we'll continue. Today is what, Friday? Oh, okay. So then we won't continue tomorrow because it's Saturday. But the Mahabharata will start again, not this Monday, but Monday week. Okay? Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda. Jai. Jai. Jai.